Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Diane Grayson. And Diane Grayson is the founder of Ethnicity Pay Gap. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's brilliant to have you. I'm really, really quite excited. And also just to learn a little bit more about the ethnicity pay gap as well, and to learn a little bit more about you, Diane. So the first question I'm going to throw out to you with regards to ethnicity pay gap is, how did you come about to be kind of developing a campaign like ethnicity pay gap?
Well, it happened, I was reading somebody's article on LinkedIn, in fact, and they broached the subject, and I was wondering, why is that yet another challenge that we have to go through? And it made me quite annoyed.
Yes.
And there was a chat going on in that process, people making comments, and one lady said to me, I wonder what we could do about it. And basically, I was. It touched me so much, I just kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And through the time period, I just had a light bulb moment. I think I was driving somewhere and I just had an idea and I just thought, right, you know, for me to be able to make a difference in this area, I need to talk about it. Mm. So I then came up with this idea of creating a T-shirt which said hashtag ethnicity pay gap, which I did for myself, in fact. So when I done it, I posted my picture on LinkedIn and I said, you know, I'm showing my support for the hashtag ethnicity pay gap. And then suddenly everybody said, oh, where did you get that T-shirt from? I'm like, I just put it there for myself, you know, just to demonstrate, you know, this is an issue that needs to be dealt with. And then suddenly everybody was asking me, oh, where do I get one? And so I started to panic because I had no intention whatsoever to get them printed out or anything like that. So I had to hurriedly go and find a printer to duplicate what I'd created. Luckily, I found someone and I decided to sell them. And a couple of people who I'm well connected with, they bought them immediately. And then other people started to buy them and it grew and grew. Then I started writing articles about it and talk about the lack of understanding around it, the lack of action of government itself to make it mandatory, like gender pay gap. Mm. And the fact that people hardly talk about it. It seems to be in sections, like, you know, January might be the flavour of the month to talk about ethnicity pay gap, then it goes silent for 6 months.
You know, I hate all of that. And it's quite interesting because this morning, that's what I wrote on a post with regards to Black History Month coming up to next month. Why does it have to be a month? This is like, you know, this is
Black
history, yeah. it's world history here, really, isn't it? But, you know, but then again, well, and when you think about it, you tie it all together, this is bigger than 1 month. But coming back to the ethnicity pay gap, I want to ask you a question about your experience, because it's interesting that you're upset about it, but I want to know if you've experienced, you know, being paid less, and how did you find out and what was that experience, please?
So I was actually on Sky News and that was a question that the reporter asked me. Yeah. And I said to her, on reflection, it probably did happen. I wasn't aware of it at the time. But the only thing that I could think of that made me think that probably it was relevant was I used to work in an IT consultancy. So I used to get paid commission. Okay. And I remember that there was another lady who we were basically bringing in as much as each other. However, when she got her pay packet, it was more. And the only difference between me and her was I was Black and she was white.
And how did you find this out? Because, you know, it's really, what's really interesting when you look at ethnicity pay gap is, I know myself, it's a very touchy subject because a lot of the time you haven't got a clue, unless you really ask,
what
your colleagues are getting paid. And it's a really touchy subject. And if you're British, and then if the British, we don't talk about that sort of thing. Really. They kind of stiff up a lip. Maybe the Americans do a little bit more. But, you know, I probably, myself, wouldn't have had a clue about it unless you kind of, you know, people drop hints or someone say something. You know, when people say things that are turned after having a little bit to drink. That sounds interesting. It normally happens by accident. Yeah. It's not something that you talk about. So how did you find out that the lady you were working with, your white colleague, was getting paid more for the same job that you were doing?
It was just literally by chance. By chance, and a comment she made, and I went, "Oh, okay." You know what I mean? But I didn't think anything else of it at the time. Mm. But, you know, fast forward, I recognise, you know, there was an issue. And had I known what I know now, I could have done something about it. But obviously, I didn't. But, you know, this is the same situation that the gender pay gap is in. So, you know, it seems to be quite easy for everyone to say gender pay gap, but they can't say ethnicity pay gap, which, you know, in reality, the same situation occurs because a woman won't know that a man is being paid more than her unless he drops it, like, oh yeah, I got paid 50 grand for la la la, and then she goes, oh, funny enough, I only got 45. It's the same situation. Mm. So why is it not seen in the same regard?
Yeah.
Why isn't the same action happening? And that's what frustrates me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's one of those uncomfortable conversations that need to be had. And we need to just look, I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing, because you've got a great leaflet as well, which I've just recently received, which outlines what you need to look for and how you go about it if you do feel that you've been paid less, because it happens a lot. And I know people will find all kinds of reasons for why.
Oh, yes.
Probably nothing to do with your ethnicity. They'll find reasons as to say, oh, maybe you haven't been doing the job as long as that person, or you've been. So it's actually really.
Qualifications or anything like that. One thing that I find a lot of corporates tend to want to bring out is that, you know, we don't seem to be at high level, therefore there's a disproportionate gap between the two. Mm. That might be the case, and that's an issue in itself. But there is also a case that people are, you know, black people and other ethnic minorities are not being paid as they should be being paid. Mm. And that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. Now, coming back to you, Diane, because I want to dive deep about you and learn a little bit more about you as a person. And I want to kind of go back to having a look at one of your childhood memories. And was there anything that you look back as a child that you really, really think, God, that was an amazing memory of just being happy and being at one with the moment? Can you share something like that with us, please?
If I think way, way back, you know, when I was really small, it would be going to the park. Mm. I used to live in Battersea, and my closest park was Battersea Park.
Yeah.
And me and my family used to always go at least two or three times a week and play in playgrounds and have a lot of fun. And it was a happy time then. You know, we just, you know, we enjoyed ourselves. We, you know, threw ourselves across the floor, you know, swinging off the ropes. You know, that was all exciting. I do remember that. And that was a happy moment, I would say, definitely.
Yeah, because it's important to look back. It's interesting. Whenever I ask this question, I always have a little bit of hesitation, because in terms of bias, it's so interesting that we normally, as people, you go to the negative bias before you go to the positive bias. And that's something that apparently neurologically is quite natural to do. So when I ask the question, I always find it really interesting to find out some of those happiest moments that you've had in your life. And that next question is, I'm going to go to the negative bias. What has been the most challenging experience that you've had to experience in your life so far?
The most challenging is losing my brother in 2003. That was very, very hard. It took me ages to recover from that. And obviously, family. We all suffered as family, so yes. And it, you know, it still touches me even today.
Oh gosh, no, totally. I could imagine that. And sometimes when you do loss, I mean, I've experienced great loss myself with both my parents. What's really interesting is there's a strength there as well. It's heartbreaking, but then there's a strength in terms of getting you through it, pulling yourself through it.
getting that resilience to keep moving and keep going. And also then you start thinking, I mean, I don't know if you had this experience, but I'll just put it out there. I started thinking about legacy. Because when you lose someone, you're thinking, wow, well, what am I going to achieve? What am I going to leave behind? Did you have one of those moments when you thought about yourself and what you're doing in the world and legacy? Yeah. Have you had those moments?
Definitely. I think when I think about all the things that I'm doing now, I always think about, you know, when my time comes, that my kids can say, oh, my mum wrote a book. My mum, you know, was the founder of the ethnicity pay gap. I've got something for them to be proud of. And one thing about my brother, he was very supportive of me. And I always remember that support. Yeah. So whenever I'm thinking about doing things, I'm always at the back of my head. He's always saying to me, hey, you can do that, don't worry, you'll be fine. Hmm. He said to me, I remember years ago, he said to me that I'm going to be a millionaire.
Oh.
I've always had that in my head. I'm thinking, okay, I'll just keep going then. Not me, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, no, totally. You put it out there, you know, nothing's too big. You know, I love that. There's a children's book that's called Dream Big, and I just love it. It's about a pig. And she gets told every step of the way that she's not going to achieve what she's going to achieve. But her grandparents keep saying in her head, dream big, think big. And I love that idea. So it's almost like you're hearing your brother saying, you know, go for it. You're going to be a millionaire. You're going to really make it. So I love that. Okay, coming back to your book, because you did mention that you wrote a book and, you know, by writing this book, you wrote it for your children. They can say, look, hey, mum wrote a book. Tell us a little bit about that book, please. And if you have it, let's have a look at it.
Yes. Hopefully you can see
it. Hey, brilliant. Yes,
Business Culture Review.
Brilliant.
I'll give you just a quick thing about how it came about, which was I write a lot of articles on LinkedIn. And suddenly there seemed to be a formula in terms of what I was doing. And I just thought, there's a book here.
Yeah.
But I wasn't one of those people that, I'm going to write a book and carry on. I wasn't confident to say yes. I would write it and I would definitely do it. It literally came back about a negative period in my life where I just was unhappy, things weren't going well, and, you know, no matter what I touched, it turned to rubbish rather than turning to gold. And then, you know, I got to that point, and then I don't know what it was that sparked me off, and I just thought, okay, let me try it and do it. And it just literally, you know, by God's grace, it just came together. It came together. So what I had done is I bought some of the articles that were relevant, I brought them together and created this book.
Yeah.
And basically it's about behaviours of organisations and how they treat their people. And what you'll find when you read the book, you'll recognise the concerns. And generally they're around the protected characteristics, how organisations treat us as individuals. And I try to encourage organisations to think differently. And I also have evidence areas where I've been in situations like on marches and how I felt. And I've been on the Grenfell March a few times and what it meant to me. And, you know, relating the fact that I'm feeling this way. There are other people in organisations feeling this way. And you've got to recognise that, you know, you've got to be mindful. And, you know, even like the George Floyd, which is not in this book because my book came out earlier, but I wrote an article about that. Was not my intention to write the article, but I thought I had to do something. And I wrote this article, and basically I was demonstrating to everybody how I was feeling and how other people, black people were feeling, because I've been having these conversations and I was just putting it out there so people could see this is the effect it has on us, you know, and acknowledge that we can't whistle our way through work when these things are happening.
You know what's really interesting? You know, as an artist, generally, whether you are a writer, whether you're a performer, however you do it.
Yeah.
Interesting to have to go to that kind of melancholic moment that you feel, okay, I have to release this now. And you said before you wrote the book that you were upset or you wasn't in the best place. But that was a stimulus for you to write that book. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, Diane?
I think months prior to that, I'd written another article called Let It Go. So basically, I was writing how I was feeling. So I was telling everybody that, you know, things that I was doing wasn't going well. And no matter how much I tried, you know, people kept letting me down, etc. But then I had a moment where I realised I had to let things go. And when I released everything, that's when I became better. And that's when my mind opened up. And that's when I realised I could write the book.
Brilliant.
Because I released all the negativity, because, you know, that period of time I was getting headaches because, you know, I was praying so hard and I was just getting very stressed and I had to let it go.
Yeah.
And to enable me to move forward, I had to let it go. So from me doing that, that's what made the book come.
You know what? I just find that fascinating, because in that letting go process,
yeah,
that allowed you to release, by releasing everything, you know, you're able to write that book. And sometimes you have to go to that place. And I always say to people, we always want to be happy. But I know myself, for example, I love writing poetry. And back in the day, I do a lot of spoken word, you know, love spoken word. And what's really interesting is I was really only able to write on that level when something bothered me.
Yeah.
Or when I was feeling upset about something. But when everything was happy days, there's no writing happening. So it's almost like you have to get to that, not everyone, but no, just for myself, you have to get to that trigger moment to be triggered. Even like with the George Floyd, that triggered me as well to want to do more, because I was thinking, God, this is 2020 and it's still happening. And we all knew it's happening, for, you know, we're not unaware that this was happening.
Yeah. But
for me, even more than the George Floyd, I was triggered by the Amy Cooper. That's what triggered me.
Uh-huh.
And that whole idea, or that whole kind of idea of the white supremacy.
Yeah.
And then on the other level, the other thing that triggered me was the white saviour, kind of that idea, you know, that idea there. That triggered me more than George Floyd, because I felt like somebody's taking this status and, you know, undermining someone because of their race. And purposely going out of their way to get this, to get that person in trouble.
Yeah.
As a black woman, have you ever experienced something like that in the workplace, roundabout? And if you have, could you share it with us, please?
I'd have to say no, really. You know, the way that I operate in business, when I've worked for organisations, I've been the go-to person, because I'm not one of those people who chat people's business.
Hmm.
And people used to come to me and talk to me, because they know once they've spoken to me, it stays with me. So I was never in that type of environment, you know. However, you know, I'm fully aware there were some people who were doing negative things to be able to move forward, let's say. There's one lady who was a blonde, a very well-endowed lady who used what she had to get herself promoted over me, even though I was there longer. You know, things like that. But, you know, I felt strong in myself that those types of things didn't fluster me. At the end of the day, I was doing what I was doing. I was making money. People respected me for my capabilities. So that didn't worry me. However, had I been in a different place, you know, things may have been different.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I thought I'd ask that question, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that may have experienced something like that. And sometimes it's the manipulation is so huge that you don't even realise, because I know, for example, in this country, a lot of underlined racism is normalised.
Yeah.
It's normalised. And then you don't actually see it.
Yeah.
And you look deeper. And I feel that's a difference between the Americans and the Brits, you know, in terms of when we really look at racism. Just in my experience, I'd see that. And when the more I speak to other women, because I think the power of speaking is so strong, because all I know is my experience. But when I speak to other women, and even on Real Stories, it's been fascinating to hear people's stories and to hear the underlined racism that is happening even till today. And that's what I wanted to get at. So it's great that you're the kind of the go-to person and you're doing everything that you can. But when you were younger, career-wise, what did you want to become? What did you want to be?
I wanted to be a teacher.
Ah, okay.
Teacher, and then that went away. I don't know why, but it did. It went away. When my brother died, I did an MVQ in childcare. I did the course and I passed, but I didn't stay with it. I went back to what I did before.
Mm.
So it's always been in there. I've always wanted to teach, to learn. I recently became a trained to be a tutor, a qualified as a tutor. So there's something within me that wants to teach and I want to share, I want to help. That's my nature. I'm a person that likes to help others. You know, I'm not a taker. I'm a giver. And yeah. Sometimes I think in the past it was to my detriment because I gave out too much and forgot about myself.
Yeah.
So now I've learned to balance it a bit better.
You know what? That's just kind of the way teachers are. I do find that. And it sounds to me like you're a natural teacher anyway. You know, I feel one of the things about being a teacher, my background is teaching myself, is yeah. you're so in service to others.
Yes.
You do forget about yourself because the way that you're thinking, and you're thinking about those young people, you know, yes. you're thinking about the class, you go to bed thinking about them, yes. you wake up thinking about them, you know, you know, you worry about their grades like they're your own grades.
Yeah.
So that whole idea of being in service to others is a very much a way of being. But then myself as well, I stopped and thought, you know what, you know, you have to look at yourself, you have to look at your self-care. You have yeah. to practice what you preach. You have to model this behaviour. And yeah. it sounds to me that you're there in terms of you're doing that right now with regards to your...
I'm trying.
Yeah. It's a process. It's a process though, isn't it? It's a process.
Yeah.
And I had a lovely conversation with a lady just... would be the real story just before this about yeah. us culturally, you know... With the British, you know, we've still got that Britishness within us, obviously, because we're born in this country, we're educated in this country. Yeah. But the whole idea, I know coming from a West Indian family, when yeah. you're successful, you do something, you're generally proud, we're quite proud people, you know? And it's about having that confidence to say, you know what, I've done this and I'm proud of it, you know? And that's really important, I think, as well, to not shy away from it and to... be confident in your skin with what you do and
yeah.
to pass that on. That's one of the things.
Yeah.
In coming on to that, I want to talk to you about somebody who may have inspired you in the past. So maybe a family member or it may yes. be someone else. Who's your inspiration?
This is not the first interview I've done. And generally that's the question that always comes up. And
yeah,
I always
start that one.
I always say it's my mum. My mum is my inspiration. She is absolutely amazing. She grew up 5 children, more or less, on her own. She embedded all the goodness that I feel that I have from her. So, you know, anytime I've got an opportunity to give her props, I always will. Even in my book. She's in my book as well.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That really touches me as well, because I think that's absolutely beautiful. Have you got any quotes from mum? anything that mum would say that gets you that you can hear, like my mum and dad have passed away now, as I said, but yeah. sometimes I almost hear their voices in my head,
yeah,
and some of their words keep me going, you know. Yeah. So yeah, so that's why
one I've quoted recently is, who can't hear must feel.
I know, that's what my mum used to say that too. Yeah.
And you know, that is true to not just individuals but to organizations and countries, because if you're not listening, you know, people are going to go against you, so you've got to really take heed. So that was one of the things that she used to say. And you know, she was always quite saying to me, no, oh, don't worry, you can do this, you know, give me confidence. She's definitely a confidence builder. You know, same token, she did have her moments where she was like, are you sure? Generally, she'd say, no, that's good, keep going, you know, stay confident. Or if I'm nervous about something, she's like, oh, you're fine.
Just keep me going. Now, that's brilliant. And when you say, if you can't hear, you must feel, you know what, in modern terms, I just see that as karma.
Yeah, exactly. What goes around comes around. Yeah.
Exactly. In the kind of in a West Indian way, it doesn't mean that they're gonna hurt you or whatever. But in some ways, it's like, if you can't hear, you're gonna feel the consequences.
Absolutely.
Of what's in front of you. If you do something bad, it's like karma, isn't it? It comes back. Yeah. Thought I'd put that in for my audience who maybe are not West Indian.
It's common sense. Common sense, even.
Totally. That's lovely. It's really great to kind of talk about mum. But other than mum, is there anybody outside of the family who, you know, who influences you or inspires you? Who would those people be?
I would say Maya Angelou. I love her. I love her writing. Mm. I know how Caged Bird Sings was the first book I ever read. Mm. I just think her life history, I just think is amazing. It's not necessarily, it's not always about what she's written, but you know, if you look at her history and what she's gone through and what she's overcome to be an amazing woman that she was.
Yes, no, totally. It's so interesting because we hear Maya Angelou a lot, but I understand why so many people sing her praises. My mum loved Maya Angelou as well. She said she was her teacher. She always says, Maya Angelou was my teacher. That's what mum always said. And it's just so interesting when you hear about her life story as well, because I resonate with her because she started off as a dancer, and I was a dancer. And then she was an activist and she was a poet. So in her life, she had many careers.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't know a lot about that, though, her past. And that's what I really resonate with her as a woman, because she's had a journey to me career-wise. It's similar, where lots of people, you know, you go into one career, you stay for the rest of your life. But if you're an artist, you do have that change and that creativity.
Yeah. And flows, yes.
That's right. And you can see it with Maya Angelou. And that's what I love about her as well. So I love that kind of reference to her book as well. I Know What a Caged Bird Sings. It's an amazing book, an amazing woman. Oh, that's absolutely brilliant, Diane. I'm going to bring it to a close now, but before I bring it to a close, is there anything that you would like to, any quote that you would like to leave my audience with from yourself?
Oh, gosh, that's hard. Maybe a quote, I don't know. Just be the best that you can be.
Lovely.
And, you know, always be supportive of others.
Lovely. That's spoken by a true activist and a true teacher. Just be the best that you can be and do the best to others. I love that. I absolutely love that. And thank you for coming to my show today. And I'm just going to say from Tony the Communication Doctor and Diana Grayson, adios. One of my takeaways from this show was to support hashtag ethnicity pay gap, and also the takeaway was the fact that there was a lack of understanding with regards to ethnicity pay gap, and the fact that people don't talk about it, and the fact that the government has not made it mandatory. And I feel all of these things are incredibly important, and as you know, as Diana said, she's here to raise awareness, she's here to allow people to know what procedures need to take place if they are in that position, and to reach out and ask questions and to fight for the right to make it mandatory to have ethnicity pay gap, so it is just as important as gender pay gap. Okay, thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.